Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, April 13, 2011. It is now 7.01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 888-773-4496. That's toll-free, folks. 888-773-4496. You could call direct if you're on a cell phone if you'd like, 646-652-4620. And send us your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com at any time. We will respond to each one of them. And we will take action on each one. And if it's something of interest, that we may even do a program on. So it's comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage everyone to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton, S-U-T-T-O-N, Sutton-Associates.net. In his newsletters, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. Andy's on our program the third week of every month. He's terrific. He makes complicated issues simple for people like me who need to understand in Dick and Jane language, and it really will help you tremendously in your own planning. Liberty Talk Radio is now available via iTunes for your listening convenience and now also on Twitter. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Folks, this evening we will have with us the founder of the Constitution Party, Mr. John Rowlands, and I think he's on the line right now. Let's get him on and get the show rolling. Good evening, John.
Hi. Can you hear me?
John?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. John, you're the founder of the Constitution Party. We will get into that a little bit later. And
Sorry? Constitution Society.
Oh, Constitution Society. Am I wrong? And I put party on everything, so I stand corrected, folks. This is the Constitution Society. Okay. Now, that clarifies some things for me, by the way. I don't know why I had this thing in my head, because isn't there a Constitution Party, John?
There is. They renamed the U.S. Taxpayers Party as a Constitution Party, and that now bears the name. But that's an entirely different effort.
Okay. All righty. Well, boy, do I stand corrected. I'm embarrassed. There's egg on my face, and it'll take a long time for it to come off. So I apologize. I hope this doesn't bode. And I will change all of our written material.
If you had actually visited our website at constitution.org, you would soon discover that.
Okay. All righty. John, why don't you tell us, give us a little bit of background about yourself, if you'd like, before we start with the Constitution Society itself.
Well, my background is as a professional mathematician and computer scientist. That's been my career. However, I've always had a strong interest in constitutional history, law, and government ever since I was a small child. And I try to make myself an expert in that field. And as I saw things developing, especially in 1994 with the massacre of the Davidians and the subsequent trial, I decided the time had come to form a new organization and get involved in big way. So on April the 1st, 1994, I founded the Constitution Society. And the following year, I created its website at constitution.org and began building it.
Okay. Well, I noticed that it centers around the 10th Amendment, and I have my trusty Constitution, and it's the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. This is the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. It makes a heck of a lot of sense to me. What's wrong? What are we doing wrong today?
Well, we're not enforcing, we're not demanding that our public servants follow it. The too many people are just letting the government run on automatic pilot, and while we, you know, go to sleep in a back seat somewhere.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the Constitution is not a machine that runs by itself. And no law, no government can be expected to follow its own rules unless we hold them to it. And that's a very big job. It's not something that can just be done on election day.
Right.
It's something that requires almost all of us to put in several hours, maybe many hours a week, of constant attention.
Well, John, it surely seems to me, after having a radio broadcast of 5 years and discussing issues such as this, that the American public is unaware. But worse than being unaware, the American public is disinterested. What is your take on that?
Yeah, well, it's easy enough to see with just web statistics, you know, visiting websites, or with ratings, you know, people watching TV shows. You know, what are people actually paying attention to?
Right.
American Idol gets several million viewers. Fox Business Network gets about, at most, 200,000 when Imus is on, and only about a quarter of that when Napolitano is on, as he is right now.
Right.
That's a drop in the bucket. And it calls into question the viability of the network itself. On our various websites, you know, we do as well or better than most of the others in our field. If you compare our results to Heritage or Cato or any number of other organizations in the field, we are up there with the most popular ones.
Right.
But if you compare us to entertainment sites or sports sites or, you know, even to some extent news sites, although news sites are in a somewhat different category, the difference is striking.
Right.
And, of course, if you look at funding, there's almost no money available for defending the Constitution.
Well, I don't know of any, quite frankly. But go ahead.
Trillions of dollars for violating it.
Right. You know,
we're up against it in every way that we can be, and ultimately the people are responsible. I'm afraid that they're about to suffer horribly in the years ahead, and it's all because of their inattention to supervising the machinery of government. They thought they could get away without doing that, and they're going to discover the hard way that it doesn't happen. And most of them aren't even going to understand why it's happening. They're going to be looking to some politician or something else, you know, some celebrity to ride in and save the day and, you know, do away with all the bad guys and elevate the good guys to positions of power and all that. Well, that's not going to work. I mean, in
right.
principle, yeah, we have to do some of that sort of thing. But the fact is that there is nothing that can be done with a cast of players that are available.
Right.
When we go to the casting agency, there are just not a lot of material there available to do the job.
Right.
It's going to take a lot of people doing their part at the local, state, and, of course, national levels. And they're gonna, it's going to take a serious study. I mean, if, you know, just casually, I've estimated that every single American needs to have the equivalent of 100 PhDs in order to cope with the problems that confront us.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I don't have an educational background, yeah. And there are probably not a lot of people in this country that come even close to mine.
Yeah.
So we are up against problems that we were smart enough to create and we're not smart enough to solve. And it's about the only thing that's going to get us through this is blind luck. It seems to be the only thing that's gotten us through it to this far. Sure, not because we know what we're doing.
To me, this is every time we get on this subject, I feel myself getting depressed. I don't feel as if
If you're not depressed before you talk to me, you will be after you talk.
Oh no, well, I've been here before, John, and you know, unfortunately for me, this is not new, you know. I appreciate you reiterating this, but to so many people, this is new. This is where I get really concerned. If you mention this to the average American, and I don't know who that might be, they would look at you like you're nuts. Like, what do you mean we're violating the Constitution? What do you mean by that? They do not understand that what is occurring today is the antithesis of what our founding fathers fought for. They think that because the politicians make this pledge that to withhold the Constitution, they are actually doing that. But they're not. And then someone you comes along and you've got to be a weirdo.
Awareness, there is actually quite a bit of awareness among ordinary people that something along what we're discussing is wrong. The problem is not so much that they don't have a nagging awareness of it, is that they're put off because they don't have a clear course of action.
Okay, all right.
They don't know what to do. They're afraid to step out and speak out. They're afraid they're going to lose their jobs, their pensions. I just got a call today from a organizer of a event in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was a keynote speaker, and they've called it off because people are afraid to attend.
My goodness.
Yeah. They're afraid of sticking their necks out and being, you know, persecuted.
Right.
Which, of course, is nonsense. There's, you know, I've been in this field for a long time, and yeah, I've gotten my share of death threats from officials and all that kind of thing, but they haven't done me yet. And now they've got a lot of more targets, so I'm kind of surrounded by targets the way I wasn't before.
Right.
But even so what? You know, we can't live forever.
Right, that's true. Yeah,
I still remember the young son of a whistleblower who had become sort of turned from whistleblower to activist, and the whole family was being subjected to harassment of all kinds. And this kid, who I guess was maybe 12 years old, said, "Well, if they're not out to get you, you're not doing enough."
That's a good point.
And I thought that kid nailed it.
That's right.
If they're not out to get you, you're not doing enough.
That's right. That's right. John, who in office these days, and please by name if you can, are behind you on this, but truly behind you, not only in words but in action?
Well, I would say the two leading candidates are that distinction would be Ron Paul and Rand Paul.
Okay.
But, of course, even they are not themselves leading constitutional scholars. that they rely in large part on other people to advise them.
Right.
And there's not actually a constitutional scholar in Congress. No, there's nobody in Congress who can really discuss these issues at a high level.
Yeah. And, you know, you think that there would be a position such as that to counsel, you know, with the Senate, with the president and whatever. But I guess I've never heard of one. You're right. You're correct.
Well, they're not going to get it from staff, of course. The staff is pretty much hopeless on that. They're not going to get it from other branches of government. It's going to have to come from outside. And they're only, I would say, they're probably less than 200 people in the country who are really on top of the subject of the Constitution.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure I know almost all of them.
Very good. All right. If you can just hold that thought for a second, and we'll need to stop for a station identification, John.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio.
John, how do you categorize? I consider myself, I guess, a libertarian, or beyond. I'm a beyond a libertarian. Let me put it that way. How do you categorize the Libertarian Party?
Well, they have become fairly constitutionalist, mainly because I and a lot of other constitutionalists have kind of moved in and assumed leadership positions. I'm on both the National and Texas Platform Committees, so I've done a lot to reshape the ideological structure of the party and put it more on a constitutionalist course. Although I do get a certain amount of pushback from people, from party activists saying, well, let's not go that far because people won't understand it. It'll turn off the average to a six-pack.
Right.
So we have to keep it simple. And there's some merit to that.
Right.
But let's face it, the founding generation were educated at about the college level in terms of their reading level.
Right.
If you read their books and articles and sermons and newspaper articles and all that, they were not written for what we would date today call the fifth grade level. They were written for the college level. People were expected to learn enough to figure out how to understand them.
Right, right.
Well, of course, it was also true then that almost no one was illiterate in 1776 in the British colonies. They certainly were in England and in Europe, but the American colonies the literacy rate was nearly 100%.
That's interesting.
We're talking about a high level of literacy.
That's very interesting. I didn't know that, and that's an interesting fact to know. Because our literacy rate illiteracy seems to be rising these days.
Well, and it's interesting how that came about, because almost all of the immigrants to North America from England and other countries in Europe were educated people until about the 1830s, 1840s. And they brought over a legacy of education. That's why they were mostly literate.
I see.
That's why the founding generation was so sharp.
Right.
But then, of course, the huddled masses of Europe started moving in, and they included a lot of people who were not well educated.
I see. Very good.
And they did not carry a legacy of education with them. And I have a thought about his personal historical background in that, because my own forebears were educators.
I see.
And they came over with a lot of less educated people. So they tended to work as school teachers. And so the stories we get from that era show that almost everyone aspired to education, but those who actually achieved it began to decline about the last third of the 19th century.
Okay, John, you know, one thing I forgot to mention is that who I have as my guest today during our break, which I'm being reminded of right now. I think that someone's going to hit me. Folks, this evening we have with us, we're pleased to have with us, John Rowland. He is the founder of the Constitution Society. I had mentioned previously it was the Constitution Party. I stand corrected. My mistake, totally, just an oversight on my part. And John is going to be talking about, we're having a little static here. Can you fix that, please? Okay. We're talking about the Constitution Society, what it means, and it revolves around the 10th Amendment. Please call in with your questions, your comments, your criticisms, your disagreements, or whatever. It's toll-free, 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Of course, you can send us your email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. We will get back to you. Each one is answered. Okay. Well, John, how many people, how do you measure your success and how many people are in the society now? Or is there a method of joining the society? Or how do you measure the amount of activity and whether or not you're getting any traction?
Well, we don't have formal dues-paying membership. You become a member just by saying you're a member.
Okay.
Of course, we have various forums and online groups and such where people can join. Email lists, Facebook groups and forums, meetups. So there are all kinds of things that I've set up where people can gather. A lot of people go to our site, say they don't want to sign into a guest book. And they don't want to have to log in order to get access.
Right, yeah.
Because they don't want to disclose who they are.
Right.
So we just leave it wide open for anyone to visit anonymously. And that's quite a few people. We're up to over 140, maybe by now 150 million page views since we started the site. We don't know how many unique visitors that is. A lot of people, I'm sure, come back frequently.
Right.
But from comments I get and other feedback, it appears to be generally divided among scholars, students, activists, lawyers, judges, journalists, all kinds of people. But there tend to be people who are don't necessarily all talk to each other.
Well, how long have you, has the Constitution Society been active as it is today?
Well, we were founded April the 1st, 1994.
Okay.
April Fool's Day.
Okay.
somewhat equipped that we were an April Fool's joke on tyrants.
I'm sorry, I missed that. I missed that, John. Would you just please repeat yourself?
Somebody said that we were an April Fool's joke on tyrants.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Well, John, since that time, what is your impression of how this has gone for you, where we are going with it, where it's going, and just your overall impression and what sort of progress, if there's any progress report that you can give us on that, or any significant milestones that you might want to relate to us.
Yeah, well, there is definitely progress. When I started out, I sometimes felt like I was alone. You know, I was dismissed as fringe or, you know, extremist or, you know, or worse. Almost nobody would admit to holding similar views to my own, but over the years, that's changed. There's been a gradual shift, an increase in interest and awareness and education, and a lot of people doing leading constitutional scholars who I respect attribute a lot of that to my efforts. Now, of course, we have the Tea Party movement, which was the outgrowth in large part of the Ron Paul movement, of people who generally know what there's something wrong, generally know what they're against. They generally support the Constitution, although their knowledge of it is sometimes pretty weak.
Right.
But still, at least the fact that they're willing to stand up and wave a sign with Constitution written on it is at least hope that they'll go back and read it and understand it.
Yeah.
So in that sense, there is certainly a lot more attention to the subject, which is why the rate of visits to our website is increasing about 40% a year.
Mm. You know, I had a recent experience. I accompanied another person to a high school here in Tulsa, a well-funded high school. They have beautiful facilities, beautiful football stadium, everything. And they had a political club. And this person was going to speak and asked me to join them and just to say a few words. And I was all excited about this. I thought the kids would be open-minded, have all sorts of questions, be, you know, anti-disestablishment, so to speak, you know. And I got there, and it just seemed like we were talking to the wall. And I was just very, very surprised that of the and they asked questions about the Republican and Democratic Party and stuff like that. No sense of protest, of disagreement. And I was incredibly disappointed. Now, this is only one school and one club. But I expected the exact opposite from young kids, you know, especially if they took the time to join a political organization within their school, you think they would be more activist type kids, and they weren't. And it really shocked the heck out of me.
Yeah, and actually, I'm afraid that a club like that typically does not draw those who are prone to be activists.
I
have done some substitute teaching and also lectured to various local schools here in Texas and gotten a somewhat better impression. But those, of course, were complete classes.
Yeah.
Mostly in American history and government. Yeah. And, of course, I take an approach to the subject that is bound to arouse a little bit more of that. You know, kids tend to be a little bit cautious about sticking their necks out, too. The school system doesn't really encourage independent thinking. So I do things like start out, okay, you're peacefully asleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. All of a sudden, your door is being broken down. Armed men are pouring in to see your dog. They shoot it. You've got a gun nearby. You raise it. You think it's a home invasion. You raise it. They shoot you down. But you manage to survive. But now you're being prosecuted for attempted murder of a police officer.
Yeah.
It turns out they were police. They didn't identify themselves. It wasn't until all the shooting was over that you realized who they were. And guess what? They raided the wrong house.
I know. I've heard stories such as that. Yeah. I've heard stories such as that.
Okay, now, the question is, what do you do about it? What is there in the Constitution that can provide you any relief in this situation? And don't say that it's unlikely to happen to you, because it can and does happen to people exactly like you. And, of course, a lot of them are simply stunned by that.
Right.
They've gone to movies. They've watched TV programs where they see this sort of thing happening, but it's always on the other side of the screen.
Right.
It's not to themselves or people they know personally.
Right.
So they have trouble relating to it. A few of them do. A lot of kids do have some encounters with the police. you know, as young kids will tend to do, and they develop hostile attitudes toward the police, and often, and of course, other authorities. So those, for those kids, they tend to be activated to some degree, but generally not in constructive ways. They tend to just become rebellious for its own sake.
Right.
It's worth pointing out that the Crips and the Bloods, these Los Angeles gangs, regard themselves as revolutionary movements. They regard themselves as defending their turf against occupying forces.
That's interesting. That's an interesting concept. That is very interesting.
So a lot of what happens between interactions of the police and civilians is that it drives the civilians into gangs and into gang violence.
Right. John, let us take a second to take a break, and then we have a couple of callers, and we'll see what they have to say or what they have to ask, okay?
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this evening we have as our guest John Roland, who is the founder of the Constitution Society. And if you looked at our website, I have the Constitution Party, and that's an error on my part. We're talking about the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, the Society, the what is going on and what progress is being made. We invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496, 888-773-4496. You can send your comments to us anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Okay, let's take a call and see what this person has to say. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Jim in Tulsa.
Oh, Jim in Tulsa. Yes, Jim, your question or comment. Thank you for calling.
Yes, Mr. Roland, appreciate you joining Joe this evening and sharing with us the story about the Constitution Society. I have a couple questions that I'd just like your perspective on. And then after I ask the questions, I'll just disconnect and listen on the Internet, which I've muted right now. One is I had supported and contributed to the ACLU in the past, but I have some reservations and concerns about the direction of that organization and if it's been infiltrated with some of the wrong people with the wrong agenda. I'd like to hear your thoughts, if you have a relationship with or what your opinion of that organization is. And then secondly, and most even more disturbing, is I feel we've had a dramatic loss of civil liberties and privacy in the last decade. And they always revert back to the events of 9/11, the official 9/11 story, and this, what I feel is a phony war on terror. And obviously they use those to justify everything, the Patriot Act, the Military's Commission Act, all the craziness with TSA at the airports. I could go on and on. So I'd like your thoughts on the ACLU and how you feel about the legislation that's dramatically broken, that has broken so many of the Bill of Rights and the things said in the Constitution as a result of 9/11 and this quote war on terror. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on those two topics, and I'll listen on the Internet. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. First to the ACLU. First thing to realize is that the ACLU is just an umbrella for the efforts of a lot of individual members. There is some limited funding of the national organization to support some of those efforts, but generally most of the things done under its name are funded and done by its members. And so and also you should be pointed out that there are state branches of the ACLU which often have agendas of their own. Well, I tend to work most with the ACLU of Texas, which is a very different organization from the national ACLU. In the past, we've been able to collaborate on certain issues where we agree, and there are other issues on which we don't agree. So, as with so many other things in this political world, you don't have permanent friends or enemies. You have allies on a project-by-project basis. And it's often easier to reach agreement on tactics than on goals. Now, on the subject of terrorism, my research indicates that there really are terrorists out there who are out to get us. It's not all contrived by, propaganda specialists in Washington. That doesn't mean that they may not take advantage of it. Back in the days of the Soviet Union really did want to conquer the world. They really did have missiles aimed at us. They really did have plans to invade Europe. That didn't mean that our people on our side didn't take full advantage of that, often for their own profit. So in many ways, it was a kind of a mutual, two addicts enabling one another. The intelligence agencies of opposite sides often had more in common with their opposition colleagues than with their own societies, their own governments. Now, what do you do in a situation where there's a real threat, but you've also got people on your side who are trying to exacerbate or exploit it? Well, the answer is you have to pursue a fairly complicated strategy, one where you keep the threat in mind and respond to it, but don't over-respond to it. The stuff, for example, the TSA is doing is ridiculous. It's not going to catch any real bombers. It just isn't going to happen. Nobody is going to take over a plane with box cutters anymore. It's not going to happen. No passenger list that anyone is ever likely to appear on a major airplane is going to be composed of people who would stand by and let that happen. So, they are simply making a show of trying to do a job so they can get funding, get promotions, get a budget, retire, on pensions, and all the other sorts of things that government bureaucrats do. But most of it is really not germane to dealing with a real threat, and there is a real threat. They prefer to make cases against easy targets that are not real threats than to go after people who really are real threats, because they don't know how to find those. It is ultimately the ordinary people who are most likely to intercept real threats. That means that ordinary people need to become very, very vigilant. And what I try to train my militia boys in doing is how to be vigilant. But that does not mean playing into the government's hands of, know your neighbor and report on him. As militia, we need to deal with any threats locally and not call in higher authorities unless we are sure that it's a real threat and can't handle it locally.
John, you mentioned the militia. That seems to be a hot subject term. But first, we have someone else on the line that'd like to ask you a question. Let's get this caller, and then we'll return to that. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name and your question, please. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
My name is Pat. I'm from Tulsa. Hi.
Hello, Pat. Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear. Very good. Thank you very much for calling Liberty Talk Radio.
I was wondering what John feels about the potential for the Libertarian Party to field a candidate in this upcoming election. It does seem to me that, as a Libertarian, that I see more on television, for example, the Fox program and Judge Napolitano and Stossel, et cetera. I'm hoping that that is indicating some shift in the demographics of the country, and maybe I'm just wishfully thinking, but I'd like your opinion on that, and you can save it till the last if you'd like. I'll take the answer off the air, but thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Well, we don't yet know who is likely to be the Libertarian nominee for president in the 2012 convention. There are several candidates have sort of stepped forward. We've also had an indication from Ron Paul that he might run as a Libertarian Party candidate. So if he does, the chances are we will give him the nomination. So who knows what will come of that. He may lead a major movement out of the Republican Party to the Libertarian Party. And that could have both good and bad consequences. But anyway, it's as far as Fox Business News, and that is essentially our Libertarian TV channel. Cable channel.
Right, yeah.
There is nothing else like it on television. Unfortunately, the highest ratings it gets is 200,000 for when Don Imus is on.
Right.
And he's not talking about the Constitution.
Right.
When you're talking about Napolitano and those, you're looking more like numbers like 100 to 120,000. So the viewership is not that high. And we need to change that. We need to get many, many, many more people watching the program just for the libertarian and constitutionalist content.
Right.
And of course, they're mainly trying to sell it for business news, as the name implies. So you would think that that would get a lot of people watching. But in fact, it seems that most business people are watching CNBC or MSNBC or something like that, and I don't know why, because the quality of the content is really poor, but, you know, that's what they're doing. It's just business people, like anyone else, tend to follow the herd.
Right.
And we have too many herd people out there.
Right. John, we have another caller. Would you like to take another call?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Good evening, Joe. This is Adam from Atlanta.
Adam from Atlanta. Good evening. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio. And your question or comment, please.
Yes. I'd like to direct this to Mr. Rowland. Before I ask my two questions, let me thank him in advance for his contribution to the preservation of liberty. The Constitution seems to be in the spotlight today, with the Tea Party candidates often invoking the words, where in the Constitution does it say? And then the elected representative fills in the blank, which can be anything from taxpayer-funded bailouts to medical marijuana use. Mr. Rowland, I'd like to ask, what is your view of the Tea Party movement and the candidates that it aided that are now in office? And then my next question is, in your view, how will the Internet help to spread awareness of the constitutionalist issues, assuming, of course, that the Internet remains untainted by government regulation? I'll be happy to take your answer off the air.
Thank you, Adam.
Okay, two good questions. Taking the internet first, I think the internet is key to everything. Because the mainstream media are too timid to do discuss controversy unless it's extremely one-sided. In other words, if they're satisfied that all of their readers and all their advertisers are on the same side of the issue, yeah, they'll talk about it. But they will generally not talk about it if it is likely to offend the powers that be. And therein lies the problem. They become tame lapdogs. And that only leaves the internet as a vehicle for challenging this very tame, controlled view. It's not just that the mainstream media is thrown around as the problem, but having worked with a lot of these guys on a personal level, it's really more a matter of culture than of some corporate moguls that, you know, in the head office, you know, telling them what to do or what not to do. A lot of the cases of, you know, the moguls wish they would do more, but the journalists are afraid. They're afraid of losing access. They're afraid of offending the friends who are in high positions. You know, they go to the golf, to the country clubs and the parties and all that. They get wine and dine, and before you know it, they become co-opted. And the powers that be know how to co-opt journalists, and they do. So, now getting back to the first question, we have a fundamental problem that, you know, is not just a matter of the people being unknowing. They're uncaring in some abstract theoretical sense. As one high school classmate of mine put it when I brought up these subjects, says people don't want to think about it. That's really what it comes down to. As long as there's something else they can think about that's more palatable, sports, entertainment, you know, who's seeing who, you know, what movie is coming out. You know, there are a million entertainments to distract us. Something we didn't have in the founding era. And now we do. It's our era's equivalent of the circuses used by Roman emperors to placate the population of Rome so they wouldn't rise in revolt. And we've got the same problem today. How do you get people to break out of that mold? And I'm afraid the only way to do it is going to take a general economic collapse. People have to become so miserable that they have no choice but to think. You know, it's the old saying, we may remember it from a movie, pain makes man think. Thought makes man wise, and wisdom makes life endurable. Sometimes there just has to be the pain. There are very few people in this life who learn from other people's mistakes. Most people either don't learn from their mistakes, or they only learn from their mistakes. They don't learn from other people's mistakes. And that's been the dismal story of humanity. If that hasn't answered your question, then, you know, feel free to answer further or ask further.
Okay, John, I think that person is no longer on the phone line, but let us just stop just for a second for our last station identification for the evening.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, we have with us this evening Mr. John Rowland. He is the founder of the Constitution Society. You will see on our website it says Constitution Party. That's my error. It shall be corrected. We are talking about basically the 10th Amendment, where we are constitutionally here in the United States, and we do welcome your calls. Toll-free, 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. You can send us your comments anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Well, John, are there any particular organizations that the Constitution Society aligned itself with or endorses or anything like that?
Well, we don't endorse. We certainly collaborate with a lot of other organizations. We have a whole page devoted to them. Plus, there are a lot of civic efforts of individuals or small groups that don't really qualify, in our view, of being true organizations. We've got a separate page for those. But we've got stuff scattered all over our website at constitution.org.
Okay.
You know, if you are looking for something to join, you don't have to go any further than constitution.org.
Very good.
And what we try to encourage, we are what you might call community organizers.
Right.
In other words, we try to do is to get people, organize people into local groups to take action on this or that subject. And maybe it could be a fairly narrow subject. The main thing is to get organized and get active on something. You can always branch out from there. But it's better to do one small thing a little bit every day than to just sit back on your hands and complain about it. Now, one thing I should mention before we run out of time. One of our major efforts is we are trying to get state legislatures, and this means you, the listener, are going to have to get your state legislators to sponsor a proposal. It's called a nullification commission, which would set up what amounts to a kind of a super statewide grand jury in every state, which would hear complaints from citizens about federal violations of the Constitution. And if it found that the Constitution were indeed violated, it would issue the findings of that effect. And if they issued such a finding, state law would trigger a statewide non-cooperation with that federal activity. It could cover everything from not withholding taxes if the withholding of taxes is unconstitutional, to not answering their phone calls, to not supplying them with electricity, water, and power, or sewer service. And of course, it would be urging state citizens also not to cooperate. It would effectively be telling them if the feds tried to prosecute someone for a non-existent federal statute, don't convict them.
Right.
And so it would be the whole state uniting behind a position on the subject of whether a particular federal action was constitutional or not.
Would that not, John? Wouldn't that be
people,
just about every
individuals
action?
Individuals doing that now, but
individuals do press on that now. But I mean, isn't about everything that the federal government enacts or legislates? Isn't most of it, if not all of it, unconstitutional? I mean, this would be the busiest
thing. Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
But of course, obviously, we're going to have to pick our battles.
Right.
What I'm hoping that the nullification commissions would do would be to first tackle more obvious, simple cases and start rolling the feds back you know, action by action by action.
Right.
Until we roll them all the way back.
Right.
If we only hear so many complaints or issue so many findings, so this would tend to regulate the rate at which they would operate, and therefore the rate at which the state would start resisting federal actions. But if enough states adopted this proposal, it would hopefully organize the entire state and its citizens to think, to discuss, to learn, and to act in concert.
Right.
And that's what it's going to take to roll back these things.
John, since the inception of the Constitution Society, what has been your, I guess, I'll leave it up to you to answer, to define this, your biggest surprise, greatest accomplishment, you know, something that just you didn't expect, what you absolutely didn't expect, and it did happen. Any one thing that stands out since 1994?
Well, I think the Ron Paul and Tea Party movements themselves were sort of a surprise to me. Well, it was not a surprise to me because I engineered it, was the militia movement.
I see.
Which sort of served as a backdrop to that. So I knew there was going to be a militia movement. I decided I needed to get out in front of it and guide it. And that's exactly what I did. Now, most of the rest of it is not really surprising to me.
Okay.
I'm not surprised easily. I pretty well anticipate most of the things that are likely to happen, and I'm very pleased when they happen. In many cases, I didn't, have a lot of hopes that they would happen. But if they do happen, it's not surprising, but it's, very pleasing.
Well, you mentioned
of course, mentioning, not enough is happening.
Yeah, mentioning militia is a real hot button with most people. They think militia people, in the backwoods, no teeth, shotguns, and just waiting to pick somebody off. They don't understand the concept of state militia.
No, and if you ever actually attend a real militia muster of real militiamen, you'd get a very different impression.
Right. Right.
They're mostly recent veterans. So we get a lot of very well trained young men. Of course, we get a few old veterans too. Old guys like me. But we have a lot of guys who are coming back from the Middle East who see a problem here and figure that their mission has not been completed.
Right. John, I'd like to interrupt you just for a second because I think we have about 30 seconds left or so. So I'd like to give the 30 seconds to you to wrap up and give our audience, our listeners, information on how they can reach you and so forth. And before we do leave, if you would send me an email with your mailing with a mailing address and your T-shirt size, I'd love to send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt for being our guest this evening.
Okay, well, to answer your question, my email address is on the homepage, on the not the homepage, but the About page. And so likewise, the mailing address. If you go to constitution.org, just remember constitution.org, almost everything you could want is there, all laid out. Just click on things.
Very good.
Just start clicking on all the links. All the blue things are links. And you'll eventually discover a whole world of interesting material.
Okay, John. All right, well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest this evening. And maybe we'll have you, if you will accept our invitation in the future, maybe to come back and give us an update.
All right. Glad to.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good evening, John. Bye-bye.
Good evening.
Wow, that's really interesting. That is, that fella is really has his act together. I'll tell you that. He should get some sort of an award, you know, for what he does. I mean, the dedication this man has, and very intelligent. Boy, I really enjoyed that. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Rand Shaker's Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Rand Shaker's Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at area code 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. There is no middle ground, unfortunately. Ron Paul has a sign in his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Crispiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well, stay tuned.